So Lizzie asked me to speak, she gave me a very vague title about growth. And whilst that's quite a big topic, it's also quite a lot written about growth and growth in churches in particular. So you start thinking about, well, what am I going to speak about? And you start praying about it and spending some time, and you start going on Google. or is that just me? But growth, there's hundreds of books written about growth in Christian churches. It's when you look at some of the Christian bookshops, growth and I thought growing in churches is number two or number three in the topic list of number of books that have been written. Apparently, you can even hire growth experts to come and work alongside your church for 6 months at a time to consult and advise and lead. Great. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that as long as it's done in the right way. But then, I guess probably for me, the biggest passage and the key passage I'm going to talk on today is from Acts 2, one that we talk about a lot when we talk about growth, and this is growth in the early church. So Acts 2, verse 42 onwards. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. And for me, the key verse is the last one. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. So what's behind a growing church? Well, it has to be God. It has to be the Lord. There's nothing wrong, I guess, with learning what works and reading books and having seminars and hiring growth experts, as long as you don't ignore the one whose actual job and actual role it is to grow the church. Jesus is the only one who can grow a church, and because he's the only one who can save. Matthew 6, verse 18, famous word of Jesus saying, I will build my church. He's talking about building this church on the rock of Peter. But I will build my church. I, Jesus, will build my church. And throughout, when you're thinking about a growing church and a growth in numbers and a growth in influence, it's quite tempting to think it's because of the people in it. And in one way, that's true. We are part of the process. God uses us in everything to be his ambassadors here on earth. But it's about God, and it's about God growing the church. Paul writes a bit about that. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 4. For when one says, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Apollos, are you not mere human beings? What, after all, is Apollos, and what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose, and they will be rewarded according to their own labor. For we are co-workers in God's service. You are God's field, God's building. So whenever we're thinking about growth, for me it has to be Jesus builds his church, it has to be Jesus, but we also have a role to play. We can't do the growing, and Jesus chooses, the Lord God chooses, not to do the growing without using us. So it's really important to get it in that order. So you could say, well, that's the end of my talk. What is there about a growing church? How do we grow a church? Well, the answer is we don't. Jesus grows his church. Probably need to talk for a little bit longer, otherwise it gets embarrassing. So let's look at what our role could be in all of that. But let's not lose sight, as we look about what our role is, that ultimately our role is just to facilitate God's role. So growth, particularly fast growth. I'm thinking about growth. I'm getting I was talking to Naomi about this the other day. Our boss at work at the moment is obsessed with growth, 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 and he keeps kind of bombarding us with emails and books to read and other things to read about growth. And you start reading and looking about growth, and you come across in the secular world big companies, don't you? Things like Amazon, Twitter, LinkedIn, all these companies that started really small and then kind of exploded and growed. There's one book which my boss has insisted that everyone read. He paid for a copy of this book for everyone, for like 800 people. Said, you must read this book. It's all right. It's fine. And there are a few bits in it which I think are quite useful. But as you start reading some of it, you start thinking, that's some biblical stuff in there somewhere. I'm not sure it's intended to be biblical, but actually the principles of what is being said are quite biblical. It's written by a couple of authors. One of the authors is someone called Reid Hoffman. He's a billionaire, a multi-billionaire in America, who founded LinkedIn. It's a company a bit like Facebook for some professionals. Many of us, unfortunately, are on there. And then funded many other fast-growth startups and this kind of real world of grow, 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 grow. And this book's called Blitz Scaling, which is about kind of growing at really high speed, literally kind of shooting a rocket up for the star to grow your company. And it's how to achieve this kind of massive scale at a real breakneck speed by just focusing on a few core techniques. So I've been made to read this book. And what fascinates me as you go through it, and there's loads of others written, it's not the only one. I think we can actually begin to look at some of the biblical principles and some of the things which are out there in the world to tell us about growth, to learn some lessons. Don't get me wrong. One's about business, the other's about church. We're not selling anything. We're not selling Christianity. We're not building a company by any means. Quite the opposite. It's God's job. It's not ours. But that doesn't mean we can't learn some things from it. One of the examples given is Amazon. Most of us here have probably used Amazon at some point. 1996, 23 years or so ago, they had 151 employees and had revenues of $5 million. And by 2017, they got just over 500,000 employees, generating $177 billion. I mean, it's just insane. There's a quote in this book, which I love, by a guy who grew a massive company. And he talks about this kind of growth. And he said, it's like harpooning a whale. The good news is you've harpooned a whale. The bad news is you've harpooned a whale. We need to be prepared, we need to set the ground, we need to make sure that we know what we can be doing to prepare for the growth which Jesus is bringing into his church, into his bride. So what can we learn from that combination of Acts 2 and some of this kind of businessy sort of stuff? And there's a few things which I think are really interesting. One of them is, when you read a lot of these books about fast growth and growing things out there in the secular world, they talk about average not being good enough. It has to be excellent. In everything you do, it has to be excellent. And I think that's really appropriate for us as well, isn't it? People are attracted to excellence, aren't they? They tell their friends, have you heard about this really amazing, great, wonderful thing? They don't say, oh yeah, I went somewhere really mediocre last week. You should really go there. When we find something really excellent and amazing, we tell people about it. And excellence makes people excited, makes people want to tell other people about it. So you think, well, what does excellence look like in a church? What does excellence look like in a group of believers? Well, there's only one who's excellent, isn't there? There's only one who is perfect. And actually, we need to learn to reflect that perfection. There's the example of Moses, isn't there? He comes down from the mountain and literally his face is glowing with the reflected excellence, the reflected glory of God. And that's what we should be. That's what our lives should be like. We should be reflecting that excellence, that glory, that amazingness of God, that perfection. And we all know people who reflect the glory of God, don't we? We know people who you come into their presence and you can just feel God oozing out of them. You can see that glory reflecting off of them. And that's the kind of person I want to be. That's the kind of people that we need to be. The more time we spend in his presence, the more like him we become. 1 Philippians chapter 1, verse 3. I thank my God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy, because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion, perfection, until the day of Christ Jesus. We are a work that is becoming perfected, becoming completed, becoming more excellent. And I think as we become more perfect, more excellent, we become more attractive. I think that excellence in terms of the church also is about being authentic. To quote this split-scaling book, bringing in new people through the front door doesn't help you grow if they immediately turn around and leave out the back door. How you can turn around and leave, I'm not sure. But you get the idea. It doesn't help you grow if the people come in and they immediately turn around and leave. People are attracted to us because we reflect Jesus, but that's not great if they then get to know us a little bit more and find out it's all for show and actually our lives are inauthentic. People aren't attracted to that kind of excellence. They might come, talk to us, get to know us some more, and actually if they find out what's underneath it or isn't what they thought it would be, they don't stick around. I don't think we have to be perfect. I'd be in trouble if we had to be. But we have to be authentically imperfect, I guess. So authentic, imperfect, but being perfected. Our example in Acts 2, and look at what the believers were doing. Were they being perfected? Were they being authentic? I think they were. They devoted themselves, literally gave everything of themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, the breaking of bread and prayer. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Not a few things, everything. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favour of all the people. I think they were being perfected, and I certainly think they were being authentic. So that's the first one. Average isn't good enough. We need to be excellent. The second one I toyed with a little bit, and it's similar, but it's slightly different. And that's about, in the same way as any company that's growing, a growing church needs to advertise well. I don't mean posters through letterboxes and billboards and websites. I mean us. We are the adverts, if you like, for Jesus in the world. We're his representatives in the world. What is an advert? Well, an advert is telling somebody about something they don't yet have, isn't it? An advert you see at a bus station is telling you about a new brand of tomato ketchup. You haven't had it. Oh, look at the advert. It looks amazing. I better go and buy it. In the same way, we are the adverts for Jesus in the world. We are his representatives. People look at us, see something they don't have, and think, wow, I want that. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, a new creation has come. The old has gone, the new is here. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed us to the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, representatives, as though God were making his appeal through us. We're the advert. People will only get to know Jesus through what they see in us. We need to learn to advertise well. We need to average and not excellent. We need to advertise well. And then as I was playing with this, I got an email from my boss, weirdly, telling me that he felt that we ought to have, this is in the business, or we ought to have an obsessive focus on the customer, not on the competitor. And I thought, yeah, it's just words, isn't it? It's fine. But actually, you start thinking about it, and put that into a Christian context, an obsessive focus on the person, not on the competitor. And actually, that starts me thinking, well, traditional business wisdom is that you stay just one step ahead of the competitor. So if you're just slightly better, then people will come to you. But these kind of fast growth companies, they challenge that wisdom, and they talk about having this obsessive focus on the customer, on the person, and no focus at all on the competitor. You just do what you're doing in an excellent, amazing way. Focus on that person. Don't worry about anyone else. Isn't that the same for us? What did Jesus do? We read through the Gospels time and time again. He had this obsessive focus on the single person. He wasn't worried about what the devil was doing. He's obsessively laser-focused on the one person. Mark 10, I love this one, this is Bartimaeus. Chapter 10, verse 46. Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." You can imagine the scene, can't you? It's Jesus followed by this huge crowd of people, all of his disciples coming with him, the noise, the excitement, people talking. And suddenly there's one person screaming out, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus." And everyone's, "Shut up. Follow us, come with us, he's going to talk, don't bother him." But verse 49, Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." They called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. And we see it time and time again, don't we? This focus, Jesus stopping. Great crowd of people coming along behind him, all of whom presumably were there because they wanted something. They probably wanted prayer or healing. They were all following him. But this one person, he stops and focuses on the need at that time. See, the devil tries to distract us, to change our focus, to stop us thinking, to stop us, to make us think that all the bad stuff going on in the world, actually we need to kind of focus on and think about and worry about and get concerned about. To focus on him. But actually, it's not about that at all. It's about focusing on Jesus and about focusing on the one person that he gives us. I started talking about, when I spoke initially, about our role in the growing church. And we know that it's Jesus' role, not our role, to grow the church. But what is our role? What do we need to do in order to have this laser-like focus on the one person? What are we supposed to do? Matthew 22, verse 36, another famous verse. "Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." That, for me, is the laser-like focus on the one and not worrying about the competitor. That's focusing on loving God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and being obsessive about loving the people around us. Pure and simple. Love for those inside and those outside. A focus on love, not a focus on what the devil's doing over there. Acts 2 talks about the early Christians being devoted to one another, doesn't it? That kind of absolutely obsessive love, devotion, ignoring all else and just being devoted to each other in love. So what have we got? We've got, I can't remember them now. Average isn't good enough. We need to be excellent. We need to advertise well. And we need to obsessively focus on the person and not on the competitor. The fourth one is a really interesting one. And you hear a lot in, particularly in kind of techie sort of businesses, around this concept of something called an MVP, a minimum viable product. The point is that if you are a tech company and you're making an app or a product or something like that that you want to get out, you can wait for it to be finished. You can spend millions of pounds developing, making it better and better and better all the time until it's finally polished and amazing and wonderful, and then release it out to the market and sell it. And that's kind of the old wisdom of you made a product and you made it feel it was brilliant before you sent it out. But actually, if you spend years making this product wonderful and amazing, adding features to it, thinking of ways that it can be even more amazing, the opportunity and the market has pretty much passed you by. And actually, what does finished look like anyway? What is a finished article? Can you ever get there? If you're focusing on it being absolutely perfect before you start selling it, then actually you probably won't ever begin to sell it because you're continually trying to make it better and better. And that's the concept of this kind of minimum viable product. You have to decide what is the minimum feature set that means that it's still useful, people want it, and then you ship it. And then you, in the background, you continue to work, you adapt, you add features, you add version 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Over time, you make it better and better and better and better. And you look at things like Facebook or something, and what they started with was actually really, really basic. But over time, they've added and added and added and added. Anyone see where I'm going with this? All of us are an MVP, a minimum viable product, at the point we're saved. God doesn't wait for us to be perfect before he puts us out in the world. Romans 5, verse 8. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. We are all a minimum when we're saved, but God is continually refining us and improving us and bringing out version 2.1, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4. Philippians 3, verse 12. It's not that I've already reached this goal or have already become perfect, but I keep pursuing it, hoping somehow to embrace it, just as I have been embraced by the Messiah, Jesus. And that's the fourth one. I think a growing church has to be somewhere where everyone is growing. Imagine a church that's growing just numerically, it's getting bigger and there's more people sitting on seats, but the new Christians look around and see that everyone else is pretty much deadwood. Numerical growth alone isn't a growing church. And actually, probably wouldn't be a growing church for very long if the people in the church weren't growing. So that's the fourth one. We all individually need to be growing in Christ, in our relationship with him, in our version 1, 2, 3, 4, and not just numerically around us. The next one is about leaders and about everybody else in the team. And I think we would all agree a church that's growing, much as a business that's growing, needs good, solid leaders. The book, this Blitzscaling book, is really interesting at this point. It talks about this analogy, which I think is so true, and the leaders in this room would probably, I think, agree with this analogy. Imagine an organization that's growing. Imagine it as a rocket ship. It's growing and it's shooting for the moon, it's shooting for the stars. It's being propelled skyward at breakneck speed as it's growing and it's expanding. The people within it, the people working within it, the people living within it are the fuel. They're what keeps it going, keeps it shooting for the stars. The job of the leader is to quite literally rebuild that rocket on the fly as it's flying towards the sky. It feels like that a bit sometimes, doesn't it? Even if we're leading in a smaller group or if we're leading on a big scale, actually, things change. There's no point in us planning. This isn't our job. This is God's job. But the God of a leader is to rebuild, change, adapt, rebuild the rocket ship as it's flying towards the sky. It's a white-knuckle ride at times, isn't it? But without strong leaders, that rocket ship, if it's not being continually rebuilt and maintained as it's flying towards the sky, it runs the risk of tearing itself apart when challenges come, when the plan changes, when the route changes ever so slightly. There has to be some planning, there has to be some thought, there has to be preparation, but we also need good leaders to help us to change that plan, change that thought, hear from God as we're moving. No wonder Paul talks so much about praying for your leaders, doesn't he? In 1 Timothy 2, he talks about the list of people to pray for. Leaders are right up there at the top. But it's not just about leaders, it's about the whole body. And growing requires the whole body. The analogy of the body, the church, is the body. You would look a bit weird if it was just your foot that was growing, or just your nose that was growing, or just your fingers that were growing. It has to be the whole body that's growing together. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 12. Now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to acknowledge those who work hard among you, who care for you in the Lord and who admonish you. Hold them in the highest regard in love because of their work. Live in peace with each other. And we urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone. Make sure that no one pays back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what is good for one another and for everyone else. In Corinthians chapter 12, just as a body, though one, has many parts, all its many parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit so as to form one body, whether Jews or Gentiles, slaves or free, and we were all given the one Spirit to drink. Even so, the body is not made up of one part, but of many. We know these verses, don't we? We know these analogies that's used. So we need leaders to guide us, to rebuild the rocket ship on the fly, but we also need every one of us within the body has our own part to play in growing together. We can't grow as a body unless all of us are growing together. All of us are growing together at the same speed, otherwise we'd start to look a bit odd. And if one leg grew longer than the other, we'd just walk around in circles all day long. Look at Acts 2. Again, the characteristics of the growing church. Every day, they continued to meet together. They broke bread in their homes. They ate together. They were together. They were all doing it together. And as they were growing, it was together in every way. All of us are needed in our collective rocket ship shooting for the stars. So what have we got? We've got excellent. It's not. Yeah, we need to be excellent. Being average isn't good enough. We need to learn to advertise well. We need to obsessively focus on love and on each other and on people, not on the competitor. We need to continually grow and iterate and change. We need to value our leaders, be led well, and all of us grow all together. But the final thing I think we need is rest. Growing fast is exhausting. There's a quote in Alice, and the Red Queen tells Alice in Through the Looking Glass, "Now here, you see, it takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place. If you want to get somewhere else, you've got to run at least twice as fast as that." Doesn't it feel like that sometimes when things are growing and changing? You're running so fast to keep up, but all you're doing is keeping up. Actually, to grow, you need to run at least as twice as fast as that. And that's absolutely exhausting in every way, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Growing fast is hard work. And as we look as a church around us and see us growing, we need to be prepared for the fact that it's going to be hard work, it's going to be tiring, and we all need rest. What's the biggest example of growth in the whole Bible? I was wondering about this, and I was thinking about Acts 2, not really sure. Actually, Genesis 2, for me, is the biggest example of growth in the whole Bible. When we're talking about this blitz scaling and scaling, the whole world and everything in it being created from nothing, that's pretty fast growth, isn't it? Genesis 2, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing, so on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating he had done." And we see Jesus doing it time and time again as well, don't we? We see him taking himself out of the situation that he's in and deliberately prioritizing, taking some time out, spending some time with his Father and resting. Mark 6 is one example. "Then because so many people were coming and going, they didn't even have a chance to eat. He said to them, to the disciples, Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Rest is as important as work. And actually, working at something is not what we should be doing. It's Jesus' work. We just need to put ourselves in the place where we are enabling that. But work, rest is as important as everything else we're doing. And during this time of growth, both corporate and individual, which has to happen, we need to find times of rest and times to take time out. So I want to finish there, really. As we grow as a church, being excellent, not average, advertising and representing Jesus well, loving each other and everyone else obsessively without focusing on the competitor, continually growing and developing together, loving each other, supporting our leaders. I'm going to end with Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.